Okay, fun seekers, we are ready to begin our journey with regard to stocks. Exciting stocks, sexy stocks, risky stocks. And we start with a great quote from a humorist from the mid-20th century, Will Rogers. Don't gamble, take all your savings and buy some good stock and hold it till it goes up. And if it don't go up, don't buy it. Uh-huh. An entire generation and two generations were traumatized by the crash of 1929 and the subsequent Great Depression. And that feeling of terror with regard to stocks wasn't entirely erased until the 1960s, when stocks once again were overpriced. Sound familiar? Yeah. We are going to spend a goodly amount of time on stocks. Why? Because that's where the action is. That's where the economy and the investments in the economy really bear the best amount of fruit, in my humble opinion. Now, again, real estate, okay, relax. We'll get the real estate at the end of the semester. But for us, we're going to concentrate on stocks in this portion of our class. Slide number two. Okay, let's work this. Okay, slide number two. What are stocks? Well, first of all, where did the term come from? We use the term common stocks, which doesn't sound very exciting, doesn't it? Well, it came from the idea that the investors were shareholders in common. And this started in the 1600s with in the Netherlands and also England also, as the corporations at the time, the endeavors to colonize the world needed capital. That's a fancy word for money. And so investors were able to buy into these endeavors, and some of them were quite profitable and others were total scams. Sound familiar? Okay, so each shareholder had one vote. If you had one share, you had one vote. If you had 10 shares, you had 10 votes, and that's how it works. Stocks represent ownership in a corporation. Stocks are equity financing. We use the term equities, which is a fancy word for ownership. So you hear people say, in lieu of stocks, they'll say equities. I'm in equities right now. Stocks allow us investors to participate in the profits and the growth generated by the business enterprise. But unlike a sole proprietorship or a partnership, stockholders are limited liabilities owners. Now, we don't talk about this advantage too often, but it's a very important advantage because most individual investors would just not be interested in assuming the major liability that a corporation can create. So you put in $100, that's how much you're on the hook for. You lose your $100, oh well, that's it, right? They can't come after you and say, oh, you know, the corporation actually has a whole lot more debts. You need to pony up your house to pay off those debts. Now, there are situations where people try to use corporations, usually sham corporations, to hide debts, but the companies that we're going to be looking at this semester and the companies that you're going to be investing in, they're not part of that scam. And you might have heard of piercing the corporate veil, right? You would learn more about this in a business law class, an introduction to business class. Suffice to say, our investments are bona fide, which is a fancy word of saying they really are investments. Now, they may do well, they may not do so well, but they're not trying to scam people. They're not trying to hide debts or get around debts. Why invest in stocks? Well, we get two wonderful things, which are both optional dividends, optional payments of earnings. We usually use the word distribution of earnings. And then capital gains, also called capital appreciation. The value of the corporation rises as the business grows, as their revenues rise, as they make new products, go into new markets. Contrary to what many believe and how many people behave, stocks are not simply millions upon millions of worthless pieces of paper. There's no more paper, it's all electronic. People trade each day these millions of pieces of bits of information. No. They represent ownership in real businesses. So if you own one share of FedEx, and you see that FedEx truck drive by, you can look at the left nug, one of the lug nuts on the left front tire. Oh, there's my part. Because, right, these corporations are huge, and so we are partaking in huge enterprises. And so we own a little bitty piece of it. Be proud. Historical performance. Over the long term of modern finance, and we won't go into the historical reason why we use 1910s, 1920s, but there are some historical technological reasons, even though stocks go way beyond that. Into the past. The return of the stock market, as measured by this funny thing called the Standard & Poor's 500, has averaged actually over 10%, almost to 11% for the last 90 years. But in any one year, it is unlikely that the returns are going to be 10 or 11%. Remember standard deviation and variance? The return has varied from a high of almost 54% to a low of less than 43%. And 2008 was 38.5 negative in the hole, one of the worst. In any given year, there's about a 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 chance of a down market. Now, wouldn't it be great if it went up 3 years and then down 1 year, up 3 years? No, it doesn't work that way, folks. In fact, between 1982 and 2000, the market went in two directions, up and way up. And people thought, oh my goodness, it's never going to go down. Then it went down 3 years in a row. Right. So you can't predict what's going to happen next year. But unless the world ends over the next 20, 30 years, yeah, we have good information, good history that tells us that capitalism, you know, might be the very worst economic system ever devised. Except for all the others. How's that working out for you, Mr. Madera, down in Venezuela? Slide number 4, historical performance from the year 1800, which is a little, remember this slide from chapter 1, which is a little silliness involved here. Because the data is not the best, but still, it shows that the last 200 years have just been phenomenal in the history of the civilization. Standard of living has increased, the technological advances have increased to the point where it's just hard to believe. We have a hard time believing that people used to have to walk outside in the rain to go use the bathroom. It just does. Flick a switch and push a button. It didn't used to be that way. And certainly stocks have shown their value because of that. Look at what's happened to a dollar. $28 million now. Is it really $28 million? I don't know. But still, the idea is the growth has been exponential. This is, again, a logarithmic scale, which turns an exponential curve into basically a straight line. And these squiggles don't look very big, but dear students, they are, because of the units are each time a multiple of 10. But notice, bonds have done okay, but nowhere near as well as stocks. Treasury bills, which are a short-term investment, an example of a short-term investment, have done, they've beaten inflation handily, but still, look at what you've foregone. There's that idea of opportunity cost. by playing it safe. Now, we'll skewer gold later on in the semester. Gold is a silly investment, but people love it. But it's barely kept in, up with inflation, right? And if you believe the world is going to end, yeah, put all your money in gold, but get out of the Northern Hemisphere. Slide 5. I really like this graph. And what is it? What is it showing? Let's take a good look at it here. These are rolling 10-year periods. This uses the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is similar to the Standard & Poor's 500, and we'll go into detail of these in a couple of presentations. But this shows you what's happened if you put your money down in 1 year, you know, put $1,000 or whatever down in 1 year, and come back 10 years later. You know, basically just left the civilization and disappeared for 10 years. Well, it starts in the Great Depression, and we see that those were rolling 10-year periods where you lost money. Right. Ooh, is it too late to get out? And then out of the Great Depression, out of World War II, we see the go-go of 1950s and 60s, when the market went in two directions, up and way up. And you received almost 20% annual return on your money. And what did you hear people say? Ooh, is it too late to get in? Yeah, because here come the 1960s, violence and turmoil. But more importantly, 1970s. What happened in the 1970s? Well, first of all, stocks were way overpriced. Remember we said that it wasn't until the 1960s when stocks were already very expensive that people started feeling more comfortable about owning stocks after the Great Depression of the 20s and the 30s. But more importantly, what happened in the 1970s was the baby boom generation, this huge bulge of a population coming of age and needing to find jobs and housing and cars and shoes. And yeah, it was a very difficult time for the economy. And you saw the 10-year rolling period not quite hit zero. I mean, not quite go negative, but almost hit zero. And what did you hear people say? Ooh, is it too late to get out after the brutal bear market of 1973 and 1974, where stocks lost half of their value? Yeah, it's too late to get out. Now's the time to put money in. And sure enough, we come out of the 1970s with new technologies, globalization, computers, telecommunications, the infernal net, something completely out of the blue, thanks to the Department of Defense. And stocks went in two directions, up and way up. And what did you hear people say? Ooh, is it too late to get in? Blue skies, technology, productivity gains into the future. We're all going to get rich. And then along comes the internet bubble bursting. And then the housing bubble bursting. And you have to go back to the Great Depression to see rolling negative 10-year periods. And here they are in the 2000s. And what did you hear? Are you getting, are you seeing what's going on here? Yeah, people haven't changed. Technology's changed, but greed and fear. Ooh, is it too late to get out? Yeah, it's too late to get out. And sure enough, here we are coming out of the Great Recession. And now it's, for some of you, you know, it's 5 years old. I don't remember that. I was 7 years old. Or maybe you weren't. Maybe you were like me and you're really old and you say, oh, I remember it all too well. But look what's going on here, folks. We're seeing the same pattern emerge. Does it mean this is what's going to happen in the future? Does it mean we still have several years of look at what's going on. I think I want me some too. I want to get into the markets. You know, I don't know. I don't think so. It doesn't mean I'm right. Doesn't mean I'm wrong. That's why they call it the future. But sure enough, it sure smells, in my humble opinion, like we're getting close to the top of a market. Again, I don't have any idea whether we are or not. But when you see things like the GameStop phenomenon and Tesla exploding and Shopify and Spotify and whatever Fi happening, you know, we're close. We're getting close. I don't know about you folks, but many of you weren't even alive. But in 1998, I was certain the market was way overvalued. It didn't turn and go south until the year 2000. That's why they call it the future. But in general, this graph shows us that if we take a long-term perspective, assuming we don't need the money anytime soon, we should do well, unless the world ends. Have I said that? I think I've said that before. Okay, let's continue. Traditionally, close to half of the return from stocks was from reinvested dividends. Remember, dividends are distributions of earnings from companies. Some companies don't pay dividends. Others have been paying dividends for decades. Stockholders used to expect 4 to 6% in dividends each year. Well, this was as much or often more than bonds returned in interest, since stocks were considered much riskier than bonds. And between 1936 and 2008, we received about, on average, 3.8%. But then, in the great run-up of the 1980s and 90s, dividends fell to less than 2%. Or, you know, many companies didn't pay dividends. Capital gains, growth, were what people wanted in the 1990s. So if we go between 1997 and 2007, we see that the dividend averaged only 1.5%. Now, it's a little bit more than that now. It's been roughly around 2%, you know, over time, a little less. But still, it definitely dividends are not as popular as they used to be. And there are many reasons given for that. Dividends were taxed at a higher rate than capital gains. Well, that's not true anymore. People wanted the business to reinvest the earnings for growth instead of distributing it to the investors. Well, yeah, it makes sense. If you're a growth-oriented investor, you're not that really much interested in dividends. Stocks were no longer considered riskier than bonds. Well, again, over the long term, that's true. In the short term, no, it's not true. Savings accounts aren't paying anywhere near 2%, so okay, you know, what can I say? And of course, people lose track of their senses and bid up the prices from time to time. Here are two graphs here of the yield on bonds from interest payments. And we'll come back to this again when we get to the bonds, right? And the yield on stocks from dividend payments. And we see, if we go back to 1960, they were pretty close to one another. We were getting a little over 4% from our bonds and a little under 4% from our stocks. But then they started to diverge dramatically with the very difficult time of the 1970s, when inflation started to rise, and the baby boom generation all coming of age and all needing jobs and shoes and cars, and bond investors starting to look around and say, well, I'm going to expect a higher interest rate. And we see what happened to stocks. In the brutal bear market of the 70s, the dividend actually went up. Why? Because the price went down, right? So if the price is less, the dividend that you're receiving makes it that much more valuable, more higher rate of return. But then we could go back to the historical reasons, what happened in the early 80s with the Federal Reserve Bank breaking the back of inflation. That was Mr. Paul Volcker. And we see the inflation rate coming down. We don't see that here, but we see it because we see the bond rate coming down. And as the inflation rate came down, bond interest rates came down. And notice, as stocks became very popular in the 80s and 90s, and the prices go in two directions, up and way up, the dividend yield becomes less and less and less, until finally we hit the year 2000, when the dividend yield hit 1%. And of course, that marked the top of the bubble of the 1990s. And then interest rates kept coming down, inflation kept coming down until finally we had the 2008 crisis. And the yield on stocks went above the yield on bonds. Now, this is very unusual. And history tells us, even though these are usually crises and horrible times for stocks, that they're the best times to buy. And sure enough, it was. It was the best time to buy the 2008-2009 debacle. Of course, nobody wanted to because they were too terrified. And since then, notice that the yield on bonds and the yield on stocks have basically zigzagged and leapfrogged one another. And when it went below, when the yield on bonds went below the yield on stocks, those were good times to buy. Of course, that's a very scary time. And right now, the yield on bonds has just plummeted. So what can we surmise from that? I'm not exactly sure, and I don't really want to say, hey, it's a great time to buy stocks, although for the long term, I agree it is. Others had said, no, you don't understand. Bonds are in the biggest bubble, even bigger than stocks. And we'll discuss why that is later on when we get to bonds. But there are many people who are saying, no, bonds are about, are going, I don't know when, but bonds are going to have their huge bubble burst. And when that happens, it's going to get ugly. Because I know we talk about stocks, stocks are the, where the action is, but bonds are far more important, dear students, and we'll discuss why much later on. So what can we say about this graph telling us about the future? I'm not sure. I'm not selling my stocks, but at the same time, I'm not too optimistic about, you know, 10% going forward in the next 10 years. I'll be happy if I get 2%. Because it's going to be volatile. That I can predict with much surety. I can predict that it's going to be volatile, especially considering where prices are now and how many people are looking at the market as basically a speculative crapshoot. Yeah. Okay. On that happy note, slide number 8. The pendulum swings. The bear markets of 2000 to 2002 and then 2008 have changed investors' perception about dividends. We now see investors and companies focusing more and more on dividends. Many companies that never paid dividends in the past are now doing so. It turns out that many of the tech companies, like Microsoft was one of the biggest examples of this, but the others, Apple and the like, they were just saying, look, we're growth companies. We don't pay dividends. And they had tens, hundreds of billions of dollars sitting in a savings account, in their, you know, in short-term investments, earning nothing. And they kind of said, oh, all right, I guess it's time to distribute the dividends to the shareholders. And so now we see tech companies paying very healthy dividends. Also, the tax law has changed dividends so that they are taxed roughly the same as capital gains. You know, folks, there's a great saying. It's actually a book by a woman named Geraldine Weiss, who actually was based in La Jolla. I don't know where she is now, but dividends don't lie. When they pay you a dividend, you have one share and you get a dollar dividend, that's money in your pocket. Now, they used to send you a check, but they don't do that anymore. It's all electronic. It goes into your account electronically. But that is the one statistic, that's the one number that you know is real because they wrote the check. They electronically sent you the money. But still, all the other numbers that we're going to look up on the Infernal Net and in the library and on the financial statements, all those other numbers could be total fabrications. Again, with the companies that we're looking at, no. Sometimes they're incorrect because they goof up, but no, they're the companies that we're going to look at are not trying to fool you. But we know that the dividends are right because we got the money in our pocket. And this is attributed to Mr. Rockefeller. We don't really know that he said it because his neighbor said he said it. But do you know the only thing that gives me pleasure? It's to see my dividends coming in. And I got to tell you, folks, I'm a big fan of dividends. We will study dividends in detail in our next chapter when we get to valuation of stocks. So, to review, what are the pros and cons of stock ownership? The advantages are that it allows the general public, you and I, Mr. Little Guy, to share in the rewards of business enterprises. And they've been the best financial investment returns over time. With regard to the major investment alternatives, you might say, oh, look at this guy, he's done a little better. Forget it. Dividends and capital gains. They are easy to buy and sell. They are very liquid, assuming you buy bona fide, which is a fancy word of saying real companies. And we discussed the limited liability. But one thing we don't normally discuss is the fact that this system has been responsible for increasing the standard of living for everyone. Whether or not you invest in stocks, you have benefited from this system because of the increased standard of living. And this is why I'm so optimistic, even though there's plenty of reason not to be. Look at our political system. In that the rest of the world, virtually the rest of the world, has said, you know what, the West, you know, there might be problems, and there are. Everybody, no system's perfect, but you know, this capitalist system is really the best way to distribute the goods and services to an economy. Now, it's not perfect. We must somehow find a way to more evenly distribute the fruits of our labors, because if we continue to have this inequality growing, this growing inequality, if we can't continue this where some people are very, very wealthy and a lot of people are not very wealthy, we just have to work on that. But at the same time, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know that old saying. We don't want to destroy that which makes capitalism so vibrant, the innovation and the entrepreneurialism. So it's a conundrum. It's a puzzle. And I'm hoping that many of our students are going to go out there and join the fight and make it a more just world for everyone. Okay, sounds like a commercial. All right, what are the cons? What are the disadvantages? Well, folks, the volatility, the risk involved with stocks. There's no way to get around it, dear students. There's no such thing as a 10, 12% risk-free rate of return, right? It doesn't exist. And that's what we have to deal with stocks. Plus, there's some hanky-panky going on, corporate and otherwise. And again, with the stocks that we're going to look at, the companies that we're going to focus on, that's not usually an issue. All right, now let's take a look at volatility. Here's the Standard & Poor's 500, the 500 largest companies based in the United States for the year 2020. A most unusual year, shall we say. Thank you, Mr. Stupid Virus. But you started off with $10,000, and you thought everything was hunky-dory, and then along comes this virus, and the market drops to bear territory, meaning a 20% or more drop, faster than it's ever done before. Why? Because people really believed, here the world is going to end. And sure enough, your $10,000 became $7,000, but you have to be prepared for this because it's going to happen in the future. Now, is it going to happen the same way it did in the year 2020, or the same way it did in the year 2000 to 2002, or the year 2008, 2009? No, of course not. Every year is different. Every situation is different, but it's going to happen. And so you sold. You said, look out, run for the hills. It's time to, because it's all good. Oh, you know what? This virus is not going to destroy humanity. It's sure going to kill a lot of people, especially with political leaders who don't even want to acknowledge that it existed. But you decide, you know, maybe I'll wait for things to get a little bit better. And sure enough, it's about May or so, and the stock market looks like it's about ready to peak, or it's going to, I mean, not peak, it's going to look like it's ready to come out of its funk. It's already come out of the funk, by the way. Down here was the time to buy. And so you buy back in, and then boom, it drops again. Oh, no, I'll sell. And then you wait a little bit, and it comes back up, and you buy, and then it drops again, and you say, I'm never going to do this stuff again. And I don't blame you. If you try to time the market, if you try to figure out what's going to happen in the next 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 days, all I can say is good luck, because, you know, history tells us nobody knows what's going to happen. So if, on the other hand, you had simply put your $10,000 in on January 1st, 2020, and went to a deserted island somewhere, and come back on December 31st, 2020, you actually did pretty darn well. Yeah, you did. So you see, dear students, the volatility is real, and it will test us. That's why we need to keep a long-term perspective. I know, nothing's perfect. I wish I could tell you that it is, but it isn't. And that's why we're going to learn techniques, as we did. We talked about dollar cost averaging back in Chapter 4, and we're going to learn techniques with regard to stocks that will help us deal with the volatility, the emotions that that will test us from time to time. Cool? Okay. So go back over. Study this material. In our next presentation, we'll take a look at the various stock markets, where are stocks bought and sold, and the technology behind these markets. And we're on our way. Thank you so very much for being in our class. We are incredibly honored, privileged, all of us at Southwestern, and we want you to be awesome. So study hard and bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College, your friends, your family, your coworkers, and yourself.